just to get us going from the into the ease into the graveyard shift, we could do some Q&A. If there's any stuff you want to pick up on thus far before we carry on. If not, I'll just beast my way through for another 2 hours.
If there is, loud. Can I encourage you to use the microphone because the session's been recorded and then the question will be...
For obvious reasons, I'm going to ask a hypothetical question. What would you, how would you have advice for leading change if a number of men in someone's congregation were less than the manly Dave that you describe here, are completely committed, love Jesus, perhaps have been broken in different ways in the past, and so are fragile, and actually find Dave quite threatening, and yet know that
need. That's a really
need.
Good question. That's so, a really good question. Well, firstly, I would say that we're all a complex mix anyway. So, as you might gather, when I've got limited time, I do paint something of a caricature of myself as well, because I'm just trying to communicate. You know, this is who we're trying to reach. So, even my humour and stuff, this is, you know, it's bloke humour, it's what you hear down the pub. But I'm just, you know, that's what I do. But I play classical piano. You know, I've had poems published. You know, I read history books for fun. You know, my daughters are artistic. You know, I don't have sons. We keep loads of animals. So, you know, I do. I shoot them too, but I do keep animals. So, so yes, I like predatory fishing for catfish and pike, and I like going shooting, and I love fuel and petrol. But there's a more complex side to it. And I think all men carry that, you see, to greater or lesser degrees. The most common cause of death for a man under the age of 50 in this country now is suicide, which says that, you know, we're not very good at dealing with our angst or our sensitive side and dealing with our emotions. So I wanted to put it out there first, because I find a lot of these, we caricature working class guys too. But actually, to me, the stuff that I'm going to talk about in a minute in terms of evangelism, they're just devices to get to people's hearts, really, to get people to open up. So I would be communicating that to these guys. I'd say, look, you need to hear what the heart is behind this and why we're doing it. I spoke to a Baptist minister in Dagenham a few years ago where he was pulling his hair out because the big thing where he lived was everyone was doing allotment gardening. Everyone in his church had an allotment, you know, and his blokes loved doing allotments. He said, I can't stand vegetable gardening. It's not a gardener, you know. And I said, well, get into it. Get into gardening. You know, if it takes planting potatoes to win a bloke to Christ, plant more than everyone else. Because you know, that's what we do, isn't it? You know, we become all things to all men to win some. So you might not believe this, but you probably won't. But I bumped into this group of guys in 2007 who were massively into cycling, and I think one of your friends on our Lanzarote thing. So I lead this sports week every year. I like weightlifting. I've never liked cycling uphill. I hate going uphill. I hate climbing mountains and stuff. But in the end, I cycled from Calais to Nice over the Alps. I did 92,000 feet of climbing and 1,000 miles in 8.5 days just so I could spend 10 days with a load of non-Christians. You know, so I think you do what you have to do in order to win some. So I'd educate the missional nature of it. You know, these guys in my new church, they all want to play airsoft, you know, which is like not paintball, you actually use plastic bullets and hurt each other. And I think, it's fun, you know, but I think, it's like, I'm not a kid, I'm nearly 43, you know, I don't want to dive around shooting people with plastic bullets. I mean, real bullets maybe, but plastic bullets and just get a bruise. What do I want to do that for? But I'll do it because it's going to gather them, you know. I think you just have to do that. Or the alternative view is what is incarnation where you are in Brighton? And it's bohemian, it's cool, it's liberal culture. And maybe you just have to look at that and say, actually, the people we're tasked to reach are like that. And so we'll incarnate that. And to try and reach the van drivers I am is actually not fruitful mission. So there is that as well. And I think that's definitely something worth asking. And I know this is a very long answer, I won't do this for every question, but it's so such an important question. In the church that I led, which Ben was in years ago, I had this big vision for a 20,000 square foot warehouse, cool worship, stuff happening, entrepreneurial things kicking off, and you know, just as I was, and then, you know, it was on a tipping point to see that happen. And actually, some people took me aside without going into detail and said, actually, we don't really want that. You know, we're quite happy doing our barn dances and fish and chip nights and stuff like that. And I was really cross. I was like, come on, you know, this church could be thousands and, you know, we could do all this, and this. And then someone said to me, but Carl, you live in Billericay. You know, that's not what people do. You know, people don't want 20,000 square foot warehouses. They want a church building they understand and jazz nights with fish and chips. That is our culture here. So you know, there is a working class estate down the road, so we planted a separate congregation on it. So I do think there is that too. You've got to contextualise, haven't you? Which I know you'll be doing. Are you in a bohemian area? Be bohemian.
You may be going to say a bit more about this now, but you were saying this morning about if you focus on men, focus on attracting men, then you'll end up with a unisex church. And I suppose at our church, particularly before I was there, we have had that focus on making sure there's nothing kind of girly going on from the front and just making it, you know, watching what we're doing with the songs and who's up the front and stuff. But now we've started to realise there's a bit of a problem because there's not really many women up
Hallelujah,
front.
Hallelujah, amazing.
And it's just thinking, how do we, you know, if you're complementarian and you're trying to focus it on men, how do you also make sure that we've got the right kind of balance of using women's gifts and having them in
so,
the right
I mean,
place?
We'd all say, wouldn't we, that women are kind of like the untapped army in complementarian churches for reaching people. And it's still fair to say that most men come to Christ through women, not men. Which is amazing. I can't remember the statistic now, but it's a huge number of men who come to Christ are brought by women and not by men. Well, I'm an advocate of releasing women into absolutely every area of ministry, bar one or two. I'm soft complementarian because I've realised that I suppose it's a theological conviction that's developed over time. But I've also seen that to have a healthy congregation, you need input from both genders because they represent just over 50% of the population of the human race. So 52% of the world are women. And if we're not hearing their voices or getting their input, then we're really going to have trouble, I think, being relevant and seeing them released. So this is not obviously what we're talking about today, but this is a conclusion we came to in a church where I was leading and one I'm leading at the moment, which would have sort of more of a complementarian view. I'd say it's soft complementarian in that all elders tend to go home if they're married and talk to their wives about the decisions that they've made, and then they get their wives' input and wisdom, and then they go back and report it to the elders as if it came from the men. So we thought, well, that's actually a bit bonkers. So we think the wives should be meeting with the elders, not maybe every time, but maybe once a month, get everyone together. Women sharing wisdom on an issue. So, for instance, I wouldn't, to release them, I wouldn't say something like women should never teach. This would be my view. What I would say is it's the male elders' role to set a meta narrative for a church. So, if we're saying this is what we think about spiritual gifts, so let's say, I'm a Pentecostal, so let's say we said, yes, the gift of prophecy is for today. That's the male elders' job. But then you could have a very prophetic woman in the church who might be able to help you saying, this is how I hear God's voice and this is how I use that gift in an appropriate way, because she has a gift that could be explained. And I think that's true how we do evangelism, how we might teach in a church, how worship works itself out. So I'd be soft on that. I'd be getting women's voices being heard, because strategically what happens is you end up with a gender war. And what tends to happen is that the men start getting really empowered and the women start getting really hurt. And then they start moaning. So I just find ways to release the women. And then, you know, when the women are saying, why are you going clay pigeon shooting again? You say, it's evangelism, sweetheart. I have to go. But then she's happy because she's seeing life happen around her as well. But I still believe in male eldership, male leadership, and male preaching. So it's complex, isn't it? But the more you reach men, the more you're going to have a gender battle. It's a fact. So you tend to get women saying, you need to do more for the men, you must do more for the men, you must do more for the men, and then you do more for the men. Why are you doing so much for men? Why are you doing so much for women? Yeah. I don't know. Difficult.
Should we take one more question and then we'll let Carl speak and then we'll have another Q&A session?
You went on a cycle, right, with a lot of non-Christian men. You do things with non-Christian men. But at some point, you've got to get the gospel in your message to them without frightening them.
Mm.
How do you do this?
Because that's the next session. What an amazing Holy Spirit-led Pentecostal leading to session two. Seamlessly flowing. Incredible. Let me just finish off on what we were saying before. I'd say something about men and worship. I think I've eliminated a slide on worship songs because I think you guys know all about that. But often when I'm talking to more charismatic leaders, you know, Hillsong style stuff, often I'll put a bloke out the front. And I get him to stand next to me and I'll say, your name is like honey on my lips. Hold me close. You know, press me in, you know, and stuff like that. Which all lines from worship songs. And they'll make this guy feel extremely uncomfortable and then say, but you're inflicting these lyrics, you know, on all the men who are going to sit and...
Somebody once described it to me as Jesus is my girlfriend.
Yeah, well, I call them God snog songs, which is even more pointed. But it's true. This is exactly what's happening. So it's erotic. So you're all adults, and I'm not seeking to be crude. I'm just going to tell you exactly as it is, as you'd expect me to do. I took a non-Christian bloke to my church in Bath, and we sang the song. I know this has been recorded, so I'm getting into trouble. Eliminate this in the tape. We sang the song, when the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come. And this bloke stood next to me, burst out laughing. I said, why are you laughing? He said, it's porn. I said, no, it's not. He went, look at the words. And actually, it was true. When you look at some words, they're erotic. They're just using a turn of phrase and language you wouldn't use anywhere else, except the church or pornographic magazine. And we don't see it, because you just got used to singing it. But actually, when you're dealing with men who have never been to church before, it's just weird. So I'm all in for objective truth in terms of what we sing. You know, why are you downcast, oh my soul, is the emotion in the psalm. But God is like this. So sing about the nature of God, you know. So like the worship songs we're singing this morning are obviously very cross-centred, as you'd expect. Men like worship music to be loud. Why do they like it to be loud? Because men don't like to hear themselves sing. It's just true. But I'm thinking about Dave again, remember. Dave will sing at the football terraces because he can't hear himself. In our culture at the moment, men like loud, and young people like loud too. Pitch of the songs, often the pitch is just far too high. Have you noticed that? Sometimes it's just far too high. Like, even in the church we've started, you know, the worship, the other week, it was so I couldn't sing. So I had to, not on the day, because I've always policy, I never correct people on the day, they've just been up the front, I'll do it the next day, so they don't feel all too wounded. And I sort of took them aside, and it's just too high, you need to drop down a little bit in your key, you know. I ruthlessly ban expressive dancing at the front of church, and I do say this to charismatic churches in particular, I don't like flags, streamers, or expressive dancing, because men just think, it's a bit weird, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So if typically it will be a woman will start dancing at the front of church, I do ask them to stop. But we actually have a formal policy at our national men's conference too of banning all expressive dancing at the front. And 2 years ago, a bloke, even though we'd announced it at the front in sort of a humorous way, he still came down to the front and started dancing with a streamer. So my Welsh director came up to me, Director Wells came up, and he's quite a gruff guy, and he went, B, BT, what do you want me to do? And I went, get him out, Mark. And he went, thanks for that. He just grabbed him around the shoulder and marched him out the back. And someone tweeted, glad to see the leadership team rigidly reinforcing the anti-expressive dancing policy from the front. Because Dave just doesn't understand it. You know, so we are prepared to say unpalatable, uncomfortable things for the sake of those who just don't get it, you know. Because I'm always, everything I do is in the context of mission. You probably come from churches where you don't have to deal with that. But one day, you will have a flag waver join your church, and they must be stamped on quickly and ruthlessly and without mercy. No enforced action songs. I mean, come on. You know, the worship leader stands at the front and says, now we're going to do a song for the kids. And they start doing the Iggly Wiggly Worm and the Fuzzy Wuzzy Bear. And then the nightmare scenario happens. I've noticed that the adults aren't joining in. So we're going to sing it again. Come on, men. You join with the actions too. No. Oh, my policy is, I'm a man. I'm not a Fuzzy Wuzzy Bear or an Iggly Wiggly Worm. And if I behave like that in front of my girls, they'll be disturbed because they expect me to be a man. So I don't do that kind of thing. We give out instruments to the kids in our church so they can make a noise of instruments. All up for noise, because then you can't hear yourself sing. Double whammy. But I won't do action songs. I think they belong to children. This keeps going wrong, so ditch that. What else have we got on there? Oh, yeah, and demonstrative emotions. So I do come from a tradition, obviously, the charismatic church, where people tend to windmill a little bit, like that. And I understand that people demonstrate their emotions, and I can raise my hand in worship, and I'm very comfortable in doing so. But I do not equate demonstrative emotions or, you know, actually outwardly looking engaged, disengaged, with people actually being disengaged in their hearts. I don't expect men to respond outwardly with their emotions in much in life at all, because they're men. We process stuff very, very differently. So what tends to happen, I've found, is that worship leaders will gear the worship often, particularly younger worship leaders, around songs that will get an emotional response, because then you get a sense that the Holy Spirit's moving. But then we look at men whose faces are like tombstones and we think that they're being less spiritual. Well, actually, they're not. They're just being men, and they are thinking about what they're singing. And men can't multitask. So when they're thinking, their faces stop working. That's just what we do. My face naturally looks quite angry and grumpy. I'm filled with inner joy, inexpressible joy. But outwardly, I just look grumpy. I have a terse manner of speech. My emails can be blunt. I don't mean them to be. When I'm talking to my staff, I have to take a step back and think, maybe I should say hi before I start asking thank you when I sign my emails off. Because I'm just a bloke, and I grew up in Essex, and it's just the way we talk to each other. But church culture, it carries something else about family and being loving and stuff. But what happens is that Dave comes into this culture and he feels like he doesn't fit. I'll give you an example. My very first elders meeting, I was a banker in a sales environment. We would have brutal meetings because we're talking about a serious amount of money. We'd sit down and have brutal meetings. And if you came up with a stupid idea, people would say, that's a stupid idea. And the person would go, I think you're probably right. Or someone would say, or there'd be swear words in there. And people were quite tough on each other. And I was used to an environment like that. But then you'd come away from the meeting table and you'd be down the pub as if those conversations never happened. Because you're all mates. Do you see what I mean? So you'd say, Carl, what you just, that's a stupid policy. We can't do that. What a stupid marketing plan. Look, ditch that. I know you put time into it, but ditch that. Let's look at this, blah, 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 blah. And then half hour later, we're down the pub talking about the football. Because it was a professional conversation. That was work. And then this is being a mate. I went to my first elders meeting, and they were going to give out a resource for every door in the town. It was absolutely terrible. I mean, seriously, it was really bad. And I was just astonished. I mean, it's my first elders meeting. So I sat there and I went, that's a stupid idea. I mean, what a ridiculous resource. I mean, I'd put those straight in the bin. What an incredible waste of money. And one of the elders sat there and he went, the devil's got in here tonight. I mean, what are you talking about? He said, you're bringing the devil into this one. I went, no, I'm not. I'm just saying it's a stupid resource. We never speak to each other like this. Well, that's why you got a stupid resource. You know, it's just not being normal. So I do think we if you want a male church, you've got to man up a bit. You know, and the reason that bad quality stuff happens in churches is because pastors are afraid to offend people. It's just true. But men respond well, I find. They might kick off a bit, they might sulk for a bit, because men are good at sulking. But sometimes you have to break eggs, don't you? And you can do it in a loving way. Sort of. But I do think, you know, we have to think about our worship, think about the things we're singing, think about these infringements in normality that happen that just put Dave off. Think about the things we're saying from the front. Think about the quality of stuff that's being served up and the attitude of people behind the coffee hatch. And, you know, it's these little areas, isn't it, that all add up to bad church. But men respond more to that than women. That's the problem. That's why I'm talking about all this stuff. So another thing you want to do if you want to reach men, I think you need to aim for extremely high quality, from the smallest thing to the biggest thing. Every little thing you do has got to be great, I think. Or at least strive for it. Everything. Because it's for Jesus, isn't it, anyway? But like at CVM, when we were rebranding and relaunching CVM, we had nothing. We had no money, no staff, nothing. So what I made sure is that everything that left our office was fantastic. We might have made mistakes, but as best as we could get it. Every interaction we had with people was grace-filled and generous. Every contact we made, we understood, left a trace, like forensic science. Lockhart's theory of forensic science. Every contact leaves a trace. But it's so important when you're dealing with men, particularly in evangelism. Everything's got to be good. And then just some bullet points. I was saying, you know, who do we pray for? We talked about kind of content in our preaching. Who are we ordaining? What kind of testimony are we using? Do you visit workplaces as part of your pastoral work as leaders? Because I think that's brilliant. Breaking bread with people in their workplaces, praying for a sense of God being involved where they're working. Because men live their lives in compartments. That work box, church box, you know, pornography box, marriage box. That's why men could be habitually addicted to pornography and then run Sunday school. Because they just open a different box. And I think our job as leaders with men is we have to deconstruct those boxes and help men see that the whole of their life is God's mission and serving God. And then that really fuels the way we disciple men too. I'll give you, for instance, all of this stuff has just come out of pastoral practice. Deciding to do pastoral visits to workplaces came out of being invited to go to Ford's plant in Dunton, where I had a number of very clever engineers in my church working at this research place. And we sat in the boardroom for lunch. There were about 12 of them there, all big brains. And I said, how is church helping you, you know, in your work? And this guy just said, well, if I'm being honest with you, not a lot. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, I'll never forget this. He said, I drive a grey Ford Focus. He said, I live in a house that's pebble-grey. He said, I drive on grey roads under a grey sky to a grey building. It has a grey carpet and grey dividers. And I design exhausts, which are grey. And you want me to live a colourful, vibrant life for Jesus? That ain't going to happen, is it? Oh, okay. And he said, you don't understand my world. He said, the church does not understand my world. And when he took me for a tour where he was working massive open plan offices, he was working in like cubicle D22C. And I said, who's next door? And he said, well, I don't know. I said, how long have you worked next door to them? He said, well, I've been in this cubicle for years, but I don't really know who's next door, but I think they've been in there a few years. I said, why not? He said, well, I designed this particular part of the exhaust, and the people I talk to are in, like, C76B. So I just talk to them. He said, I don't need to talk to them. He said, this is the workplace, Carl. I can't just go around and start doing the gospel because they're working on something else, and we just don't need to interact with each other. I know you'd expect me to, but from the minute I get in to the minute I leave, I'm busy, full on. And it was great, because I started to think, I'd forgotten what life was like in the bank. Went to visit another guy who was working in Coutts Private Bank. As a result of that, arranged to meet him in Cafe Nero's next door. And as he came into the coffee shop, he kind of lost the colour out of his face. And I said, you all right? And he said, it's like God has just come into my workplace. And I said, well, God hasn't, because it's me, you know. He said, no. He said, what I mean is, he said, I've totally disconnected from church when I come here Monday to Friday. He said, you being here is just such a... It's weird. He says, it's weird. Good man of God, led him to Christ, discipled him. Never visited him in his workplace. He's there Monday to Friday dealing with shades of grey and problems and compliance issues and customer stuff and stress. Then he goes to church on Sunday and was working the sound desk. But he'd not made a connection. And this is the problem you face. The problem you face is you've got these guys out there, but they're not joining the dots in their daily life to church. Does that make any sense? So it's a... And I don't think I'm overstating that. I think it's a real reality. Just two examples before we move into strategy. I know that's a huddle, not a scrum down, but I prefer the word scrum down because it's more masculine. But here's a male communication technique which I don't think compromises your preaching ministry. Here's an idea to bloke up the church, a very practical Sunday idea. How about on Sunday, you call all the men to the front after the service? You say, you preach, you've done the worship, notices, all that stuff, and you say, while we're having tea and coffee, I want to see all the men. Just the men, not the women, I only want to see the men. Then all the men come forward, and of course, the women will be saying, why is it just want to see the men? It's always about the men. But he said, I just want to see the men. So all the men come down, and you get them huddled around you. And then you get them to hold up an object. So you say, look, blokes, all get your phones out. I'm going to make this up. Get your phones out. So all hold their phone. They'll all have a phone. So get your phones out. And they say, how many of you are too reliant on your phones? Emails, texts, phone calls, work stuff, looking at your phones all the time. You say to them, I'll tell you what's going to get you through this week. It ain't going to be your phone. It's going to be in a band of brothers. And now you're going to shut my lack of biblical knowledge. 1 Peter somewhere says, honour the brotherhood. 2:17. Let's try that one. Let's make it up in a way, she'll believe me. 1 Peter 2:17 says, honour the brotherhood. You know, church of brotherhood. And say, that's the verse for this week. Honour the brotherhood. I want you to remember it. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn to the bloke next to you. I want you to put his number in your phone. And this week, when the chips are down and you're stressed out, I want you to send a text to that bloke and say, would you pray for me? And this week, even if things go well, you send a text and say, pray for me on this particular issue of work or in my retired life, whatever it is, this week. Do that this week. And we'll all be brotherhood this week. Because actually, it's standing strong in prayer and being brothers together that will get us through. In the power of the Spirit, walking with Jesus. That's what gets us through. And then you say, look, we're going to pray now. And then you say, and don't say to the women what I said unless they ask you. And that's it. And it lasts 2 minutes. You could empower a man in your congregation to do that talk. Because this is what happens. This is good complementarian stuff, this. This is what happens. He gets back in the car with his family and his wife says, well, what was that? Why did Carl call all the men for it? And he says, oh, it's brilliant, actually. He made us get our phones out because, you know, we're a bit addicted to our phones. And the wife says, no. He said, well, actually, what I've done, we've all swapped numbers because what's going to get us through is prayer. We're going to be praying for each other. And, we, you know, I'm going to remember this verse, honour the brotherhood. Above all things, you know, honour the brotherhood. And that's our word for this week. And we're going to live that out. Because actually, you know, as a family, we need to be mindful to pray for each other during our week. And for the first time ever, he's teaching his family. For the first time ever, maybe. He's leading his family. And because of the nature of the talk, it's under 5 minutes, and it involves an object, a touch point. He'll remember it. Now, you imagine, you, 1 week you give out 2p pieces, another week you give it, or another month you give out a pen, another one it could be just some iconic symbol, just cheap stuff, but they have a row of lessons. So one a month, 12 lessons over a year, and they won't forget it. And I bet they'll remember that more than any sermon that you do, actually. I know sermons go in gradually to our spirit over time, but it's male-specific teaching, and it empowers the men to start leading their families. What do you think of that? It's good, isn't it? I think that's... I mean, try it. But I've done this in my churches, and it worked brilliantly. It's just a male form of communication. We need to put some grit back in the gospel too. Here's a little project that we're doing at CVM. I love this. Just quickly, one of our projects is in Cambodia, in Phnom Penh. Phnom Penh, you can get a girl for sex for $1. You can buy a Singapore sling for $1. So for $10, you can have lots of sex, get absolutely drunk. And there are stag parties going out to Phnom Penh. With underage girls too, it's a horror story. And there are stag parties going out from this country now to Cambodia because of the cheap sex and the cheap drink. This is putting the hairs back on the chest of the gospel, basically. And so our guys looked at the brothel mall, which is Alex's shopping mall, it's become a brothel mall, and they thought, well, we'll take this on. So they got a unit, and they called it the message parlour rather than the massage parlour. And because they're into quality, they made it look better than all the massage parlours. Point being, at 1 o'clock in the morning, when a bloke's had 5 Singapore slings, he doesn't see that it says message parlour, he thinks it says massage parlour. So he walks in there for a girl, but gets a tub of Haagen-Dazs and a gospel instead, which is quite a good alternative, I would suggest. And we've also seen girls rescued, traffic girls rescued in that place as well, and all kinds of good stuff happen. But you can imagine how tough running a project like that is amongst organised crime gangs that are running brothels, can't you? There were young men running that. The guy in the background is one of the workers out there. The guy in the foreground is my operations director. We were just out having a coffee and just watching guys walk in and receiving the gospel and seeing behaviour thwarted. Now, I'm not showing that to promote CVM because I'm leaving. We don't need funds for the project either. That's not what I'm showing it. What I'm showing it is this is a masculine way of getting men empowered through the gospel. But the point being, what is the message parlour you have near you that you could establish? What is the gospel sort of commando hit team type work that you could do that will get men rallying around? Because so often we think of things like community cleanups and stuff like that, but what's got an edge to it? I mean, what's got a real edge? You know, is there a sex shop you can set something up next to? Is there a brothel? Is there a... Now, what is there? It doesn't have to be revolving around sex, but, you know, what is there that you can do where men think, that energises me, that grips me, that gives me purpose? Other than hearing great teaching and worship, actually, this is something I can take a risk for this. And actually, I wouldn't mind putting some money into this. And actually, this could hurt me and cost me, but I like it because it's a fight. It's like calling guys to a scrap. Because when you do that, then good discipleship starts to take place because guys start to clean up their lives. Because they're, you know, a guy getting involved in the message parlour, by nature, is going to stop looking at porn. Isn't he? Because he's now getting switched onto a fight that's dealing with sexualisation. And he sees exploitation, so he's going to clean his life up. Now, not all of you are looking convinced. But what I'm saying is, we need to call the guys to a fight. And that's a dynamically attractive way of doing church for men. They'll really appreciate it. They'll grow spiritually.
Carl, it'd be great to hear more examples of the everyday, because very few of us are in that kind of situation.
No, but I'm saying, where is it near you?
Yeah, but give us some examples from where it's working in other churches. Give us some positive examples.
Well, I'm going to go on to that next in terms of how we do evangelism. The problem we have is not many churches are doing anything. This is the problem. The reason we are seeing such a massive decline of men in the church is that we are not shifting our strategies. So we are relying on excellent biblically compliant preaching, thought through worship, and people aren't coming to Christ. And men are leaving the church. Now, I know there are examples where that's not happening, but they're few and far between. So most church growth, I have to say, is transfer growth. And most conversions are women or needy people. Yeah, well, this is the problem.
I'd love to hear some.
Yeah, but
even if there's a small amount of good practice, tell us the good practice.
Yeah.
Can I rephrase that question? You've talked about planting churches.
Yeah.
Being an elder.
Yeah.
You're leading CBA.
Yeah.
How do and you're married with kids.
Yeah.
How do you cut out your time so that you get to know blokes who are Dave?
Yeah.
Who have no interest in church?
Yeah.
I'm assuming you do that rather.
Yeah,
than
I
just,
do.
Rather than just wait for those who come.
Yeah, yeah.
The behind that is it's really hard for Christian ministers to cut out that time to be with someone who's got no interest in church. No interest in church.
Yep. So. When I was leading Billericay, which by the time I left was quite a big church with multiple congregations, my policy of my elders was you can only be involved in one area of church life. And you must be involved in something in the community. It could be a dining club, could be a fishing club, could be you're a town council, I don't care what it is, but you must, as an elder you have to do something. So by the time I left, our elders were all doing something, because I thought that creates a DNA. So for me, my thing when I was at Billericay was, every Tuesday night, I'd meet a group of guys that went down the pub together, that I'd become friends with. I became part of the Tuesday night, let's go out for a beer group. What I do now, I mean, life's changed for me now. And some of those guys came to Christ, actually. But life's changed for me now, and my big thing now is I go to the gym at regular times, and I meet the same people. And now that's progressed. I'm starting having lunch with a couple of most serious powerlifter types. Make me look like I'm tiny. And I will actually deliberately make time for them as part of my lifestyle. Now, for me, because I'm very busy, it means, and I have a dog that needs walking. So I get up early and I walk the dog. Then I come back home and I get into my gym kit and I go to the gym 4 mornings a week when I'm at home. And I meet them. And then I go to work. And I'm usually at my desk before 8 o'clock. I usually finish late, so I make the time. I don't miss parents' evenings, and I don't miss school plays, and I do all that. I'm a dutiful dad too, but I had to make time in my schedule in order to do that, because I think that's just a real priority for me, because I can't not live it. And now I'm having to adjust a little bit because we're planting this church now, so I'm just adjusting times a little bit now. But we've adopted a bivocational model of church leadership, so the guy who will be the full-time leader is still a minimum wage gardener at the moment, and he's doing that because it gives him flexibility. But we're thinking that we can get a church of 250 and he still might just do 2 days a week because we're going to be team-based bivocational. That's just the approach we're going to try and experiment with. In terms of good practice, the stuff that's happening out there, I'll show you some stuff in a minute where I've got loads of examples. So I've got 45 minutes worth of stuff. We'll have a break first just on just good practice evangelistic men's ministry. We've got loads of examples of things people are doing. The problem we face is, for me, it has to be long term, which we'll come on to. It has to be thought through. It has to be well planned. And it takes a lot of energy. And what often happens is it'll be one person, say someone like yourself, or a church leader, or an enthusiastic man who'll grab hold of it, but then something happens or gets tired or exhausted and it all falls apart because it's relied on one person. So I'm very much up for team-based stuff where you use a variety of skills and then we get something going. And someone said something earlier, a speaker this morning, is it Phil? Said something about stretching out towards other people more. I tell you where I've seen best practice, or where we're starting to see things change, is where regions start working together inside a 10-mile radius. Where churches club together to do, band together to do men's work, and they don't get territorial, even across charismatic conservative chasms, then we see the best men's work in the country. And where they tend to part companies when it comes to do we do Alpha or do we do Christianity Explored, to be honest with you, it's as stark as that. And that's fine. But some of the stuff we'll show in the earlier stages, where people are clubbed together, we see the biggest impact and the most changed lives. And obviously, the gathering, 2,000 men in a field near Swindon, with guys coming to Christ, is a product of some good men's work happening out there. Because it's only grown to that size because men are bringing men from their men's groups who aren't Christians. So there is good practice, but the overall picture, I'm sorry to say, is actually quite bleak. It's after 10 years, it's you know, we're seeing some good stuff. But, I mean, the decline in the Anglican Church, this is name-dropping, isn't it? I had a private meeting with Justin Welby, and he was looking at some stats that had just been given to him that was showing that unless the Anglican Church grew by conversions by quite a significant percentage, it was going to be gone in about 30 years at current rates of decline. So it's frightening. Someone said to me, I might be misquoting here, someone said to me that there are a couple of denominations whose financial planning, and I do believe that one of them could have been the Anglican Church, their financial planning is for the shutting down of the denomination long term over 20 to 40 years, not its continued growth. Sales and investments, where money is being placed, is all about long term decline and managing decline well rather than growth. Now, the reason that's frightening, it's frightening for a number of reasons, but the DNA, our whole culture and our values are not geared around how do we win people to Christ. That's scary, isn't it? So the reason I'll travel from Chesterfield to come to a group like this is you are a gospel partnership. You know, you are about proclamation. So we want to work with anyone who is about proclamation, because the other frightening thing we face is that most people are not talking about conversion anymore. People don't talk about people being saved. I know evangelists who don't quite believe in conversion in the way that I believe for it now. So, best practice, my view of best practice now, do something, just do stuff. We used to try everything, you know. My Twitter thing says, nothing ever happened to a guy who didn't have a go. You know, and I don't have any pride about anything that we're doing. You know, if something we're doing isn't working, we just ditch it. Try something else. So I think the basic message is not much best practice out there, but what there is good. We'll show you after a short break, and then we'll, see where we get to. It's a bit depressing, isn't it? But it's true. I mean, I've been travelling the country now for 10 years. It's pretty bleak. One more question. I think we'll break a little bit early, if that's all right, because then we'll come back early and we'll plough on.
Right. Hi. Yeah. Just a thought on the what can you do? Would you sort of advocate social enterprises for guys to get involved in? So, I mean, we're in Hastings, so we've got quite a lot of depravity. So we've got homeless, drug addicts.
Yeah, that would be my view of the message parlor now.
Yeah.
You know, in your context, much better put than I did. So I would say. One of the big things that we can do as churches is seek to create employment. That is an amazing mission strategy at the moment. I know unemployment figures are apparently dropping, but particularly at the moment where we're under financial pressure, creating employment opportunities or skills training, I think it's just a brilliant thing we can do. Definitely. And one of the things I did in the church, at one of my churches that I led, we created something called PIT, which is the Project Implementation Team. This was a best practice example. I think one of my own, one of the things we did well. We got a banker, an accountant, a builder, an engineer, and a board strategist type guy who are all semi-retired or retired. And we showed them the vision of the church, and we said, you have a free brief. Interview and talk to everyone. Come back to us and say, this is what you're doing well, this is what you're doing wrong, and this is what we could do. Be entrepreneurial. And if we need money for stuff, think about how we can raise money. Just use your skills. Draw in whoever you need, and then come back to us with a plan. And they loved it. Two things. You've got a lot of guys who are semi-retired or retired, think they've been put on the shelf, and they're not. They have a vast array of skills, knowledge, expertise, and energy that is often not tapped into. Second thing, it just embraced people's skill set. You know, from practical through to board type stuff and strategic thinking. And I think that was one of the reasons in my tenure there where the church grew, because it created an entrepreneurial feel to the church, and that it was something that the men could get involved in. It was exclusively a male group that we got doing that. Not because we didn't think women didn't have strategic skills, but I wanted to tap into the men, and that was just a little bit different to a men's breakfast, isn't it? Anyone else? Or should we stop?
can bring that.
Just to say the one thing I would disagree with you about, I think men can multitask. My wife said to me once, you cannot multitask. I said, yes, I can, darling. I can think about anything and say, yes, dear, no, dear, yes, dear, no, dear, to you at the same time.
I didn't hear you, so I was looking at my computer. Sorry.
Not worth repeating. If we break now, 20 past, come back. Half an hour. We're just 10 minutes in front of ourselves. Okay, 15.
Okay, just so when we come back, we're looking at best practice on evangelism that we've seen around the country and strategies at work. 45 minutes, then we'll be done.